Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, Charlie, thank you so much for your company. Lovely to see you. Lovely to meet you for the first time. Heard a lot about you, but haven't actually met you. So start by introducing yourself to our listeners and tell us a bit about your story.
Thank you. Lovely to be here. So my name is Charlie Martin. I'm 37. I'm a racing driver, originally from Leicestershire. And I started off hill climbing, and I'm now progressing through into endurance racing and aiming to be the first transgender driver to ever compete at the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
Wow, I mean, that's some statement. Just if you to take it into the separate parts and all together, that's incredible. That's exciting. And good luck to you. And we want to sort of pick apart your story and talk about it and hopefully support you in that ambition. But tell us, because you've been racing, you were racing as a man, and then you transitioned, what was it, 7 years ago, is that right?
Yeah, about 7 years ago now. So 2012 is when I started transition. And it's been quite an adventure, I suppose, in many ways. Transition is something that if I'm honest, I never thought I would be someone who would do that. Not because I didn't want to do it, but purely because it just seemed like such a scary, daunting road to walk down. Mm. And especially, first and foremost, from a personal point of view, but obviously competing in motorsport as well. Mm. I couldn't really see that I had a future doing the sport that I love. So it's been quite a journey, I'd say.
So was that something that was stopping you wanting to transition because you thought you may be alienated from doing something that you really wanted to do?
I think really it was, for me, it was just coming to a crossroads in my life that I'd reached so many times before where I knew that I just kept going around in circles, basically, and reaching this point where it's either decide to transition or carry on living and trying to function and trying to get by as I was. And I think, maybe in some ways being in motorsport, being in that kind of world, perhaps made me feel less able to transition, as opposed to perhaps, if I'd been competing in another sport or, just in another kind of career, perhaps where you're, it feels a bit more diverse, and you can see that perhaps the support is obviously going to be there for you. I guess there's all kinds of reasons, really. People transition at all stages of their life. Some people do it very young. Mm. I know people in their 70s who are transitioning. There's no right or wrong, really. It's very much a personal thing of where you reach that moment that you know this is it. Okay.
So what was your moment? What was the tipping point, the catalyst, if you like?
Do you know, for me, I think a lot of it was actually driven by YouTube, which sounds like a slightly random thing, but I discovered other people vlogging. Other trans people who are my own age, who'd really, normal people as well. A lot of these people weren't people with like millions of followers. They were just normal people with normal jobs, normal lives, normal problems. and they were very relatable. And I think when you can, when something seems so far out of reach that you can't really connect with how you're going to be put in that, you know, you're going to be doing that thing. But when something seems very tangible and you can actually see people doing it and you can see that they're actually really happy, I think for me that really was the catalyst, because I realized actually, yeah, I can do this. If I push myself, it's possible.
And how many people knew at this stage? How many people close to you knew that that's what you were kind of wrestling with?
Not really anyone, to be honest. I mean, I came out to my mum when I was probably about 10 years old. And my mum passed away when I was 23. So I didn't have her for support at that stage of my life. And so really, it's something that I'd also told some of my school friends at that point in time, who were still in good, you know, in contact with. But it was really something that I just kept in a box, nailed shut inside me.
That is incredibly hard and presumably incredibly lonely. When you say you came out to your mum, what did you say to her?
I guess I just tried to sit down with her one day and I said, hey, you know, mum, this is going to be a real surprise, but I feel that I'm a girl and that I've been, you know, born the wrong way and that I need to change, basically.
And you were 10 when you said that.
10 years old,
That's an incredible awareness at such a young age that I'm sure many of us don't ever feel. So in a way, it's, you know, it's quite enlightened, really, isn't it?
I guess so. I mean, I think a lot of trans people I know and you know, you probably remember back as far as about 6, even, you know, 6 or 7, which is around the age that I really first became aware that I was trans. I didn't know what being trans was back then. I didn't know, you know, it's not like today where trans people are a common topic of discussion in the media and everything. Back then, you know, being trans wasn't even like, you know, widely understood or seen or anything. So when it took me time to get to grips with how I felt, and to realise actually that, just for one, I'm not the only person in the world who feels this way. But still back then, it was a very lonely experience to grow up feeling alone and scared and, you know, to a degree ashamed of, like, I had something wrong with me. And I think fast forwarding to discovering people that I could suddenly identify with who felt the same and who'd actually taken that step and were living authentically as their true selves was really, really important for me, and actually seeing that, wow, this is something that I have the power to, you know, I have the power to take control of my life and do something about it.
It's interesting that you say, you know, back then it wasn't understood. I still think today it's not really understood. I mean, it's fantastic that we're talking about it and it's part of sort of everyday discussion. But I think a lot of that seems to be focused on certain industries and certainly certain hubs of people. So London and Manchester, for example, but you kind of go beyond that. Like, I was astounded on Twitter for people who I thought were sort of bright and engaged human beings that still have a problem with it. And perhaps that is a lack of, I'm sure it is a lack of understanding. Explain what it is to be trans.
You know, somebody explained this to me in a very simplistic metaphor recently. And, you know, they said it's a bit like if you're holding a pen, you know, nobody tells you if you're left-handed or right-handed. You just know, you know, one feels right, one feels wrong. And being trans is a little bit like that. It's like you know something doesn't feel natural. And until you do something to correct that, you're just very acutely aware that you feel out of sync. It's a common conception that you know, somebody's sexual, someone's gender identity and their sex are the same thing, you know, and even down to that is a very, very simplistic understanding. But actually, you know, your gender is in your head. It's just that most people, your gender is, you know, your gender is in alignment with how you feel and what your body says and, you know, your physical characteristics. But for a lot of people, that's not the same. You know, that's not the case. And when you're having to live with that day to day, you know, nobody decides to be trans. It's something that you're born with. And believe me, nobody would decide to be trans because it's hard. You know, it's a really tough thing to go through, whatever age you are. You have to deal with a lot of stigma and all kinds of negativity. So to ever think that someone would choose this is, you know, very misguided. And it's just, it's just the way, you know, if you're born and you feel like that, then you have to do something about it, because fundamentally you're walking around in the wrong body with the wrong gender expression. And it's horrible. You know, I mean, I developed coping mechanisms to deal with just living day to day. And after something like 25 years, you don't realize how just that's become a part of the way you function.
So what kind of things would you do to get by?
I guess just, I mean, you know, just focusing on things in my life, throwing myself into work, hobbies. You know, when I was young, I struggled with, you know, all kinds of things that young people struggle with growing up, you know, just ways of escapism, really. And just trying to shut off my brain from what was going on inside me. I mean, it's, I'm painting a very dark picture, but I suppose it's just when you, it's really complicated when you feel that way, but you're unable to be who you want to be in society. And I think really the thing that needs to change is that, whereas, you know, the person feeling that there's something wrong with them, really it's society needing to change. It's society that needs to actually just open up, empathize and understand people who are born this way, and just, you know, take away that stigma that people are attaching to being transgender, because there's no need for it. You know, people are just people. We all want the same thing. We want to be happy. We want to be loved. And it's a simple human right, really, isn't it?
Of course. Why do you think there's such a reluctance, in fact, resistance to that? I'm always shocked by the reaction of so many people. I kind of want to ask them, what are you scared of? What are you threatened by? Why does this bother you so much? And I guess part of your job, in a way, or your role, or your raison d'etre, whatever you want to call it, is to educate and help people understand, because with understanding comes empathy, and with empathy comes inclusion. What are people so scared of, though? If it doesn't directly affect them, why are they so bothered?
I don't know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, to me, that feels like my mission in life, really, is to use my platform to create change, to educate people, and to help move things forward. I think unfortunately, you know, generally, like so many things, it's just a lack of education, and to a degree ignorance of you know, of what it's like to be trans. I think unfortunately there's a vocal minority right now who have a very anti-trans agenda, and these people are given a lot of are given a platform within the media in various ways to put their opinions forwards. And I think these opinions are very damaging and very hurtful. And the difficulty is, you know, my experience is that I've met so many people through transition who've never met a trans person. And I can probably count on one hand, you know, over 7 years, the negative experiences that I've had in that context of when I actually sit, you meet somebody, I'm trans. Oh, really? Wow, I didn't know. Yeah, gosh, what was that like? You know, and you sit and you talk to someone for a moment and they come away with a completely different understanding.
So it's exposure to it, and that can only come in with time.
Exactly. If people have never met someone who's trans, what are they basing their opinions on? Headlines they're reading in tabloids? You know, it's that's the thing. It's just a lack of understanding, I think.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've recently had the case of Israel Folau, the Australian rugby player who in this like incredible audacious talent on the rugby pitch, but was is you know hanging on, and to his religious beliefs that you know gays are destined for hell, is what he Instagrammed and refused to delete from his social media post. Now it's interesting because on the one hand, I do respect everyone's right to believe and respect that they've been brought up with, because it's part of their cultural identity, it's part of who they are, they don't want that threatened or damaged. But I equally have a problem with people hiding behind religion and saying, because I'm not comfortable with what that means, I'm going to say it's what religion's telling me to do. I don't know if you can ever separate the two. I feel like religion is a shield for a lot of people who aren't ready just to sit down and have a chat and understand that you're just a human being like anyone else, as you say, looking for love, looking for acceptance, just to get on with your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not religious myself. So I guess I'd say I'm quite a spiritual person. I just feel that I don't know enough about different kinds of religions and what they preach, but I think that to a degree people can interpret religion into a way that aligns with their own personal feelings. And I think really anything that spreads a message of hatred or something that is denying people a basic human right or even a right to exist, is I don't see how any religion can really get behind that. I don't know. I mean, you know, we're all human beings, we all have a right to live on this earth. And I that's my view on that, really. I mean, how can you hide behind something that goes against that?
We could do like 10 podcasts on religion, I'm sure. Like this is what I find really interesting. I was just chatting to a mate before I came to meet you. I was saying, there's just so many paths we could go down with this podcast. There's so much to discuss. It wouldn't really do it justice just limiting it to a 40-minute podcast or whatever. And so I'd love to sort of keep in touch with you and chart your progress and see how things are evolving and changing. But we can talk about that another day. It's just, it's interesting. I think, personally, just from like scouring through the tweets that I had about you, was that I think people love to pigeonhole, and I think people love to say, right, she's white, middle class, straight, female, you know, and they feel safe in understanding you and pigeonholing you. Once the minute those lines are blurred, they don't quite get who you are, and in some way, and I don't know why, that threatens them. And I think it is that lack of knowledge and that lack of understanding that just makes them feel a bit wobbly about life. I think people love to compartmentalize and pigeonhole, and those boundaries are secure in what they've grown up understanding. And the minute you challenge that is when they struggle. I mean, one person tweeted me basically on the lines of, why are you trying to make racing about sexuality and politics? I said, well, I'm absolutely not. This is what her life's about. But she wants to be a racer, and she wants the acceptance, and she wants to be a role model in that respect. I think the other thing is that once other girls and boys in your situation see you as a strong role model, they will have that opportunity to emulate.
That's it in a nutshell. That's really what it's about. I mean, you know, I love motorsport, I love racing, and that's what I want to go out and do, and that's what I want to be good at and be known for. But the thing is, we're still a long way from being in a place as a society where everybody has the same opportunities or feels that they have the same opportunities. For me growing up, one of the biggest things was that I had no role models. I could never see anybody like me in motorsport or really in other forms of life. And when you're growing up, I mean, we all know the importance of role models. And when you don't have that person to look through, to look up to, and you can't see yourself, you know, you don't have a vision of who you want to be yourself in your life, it can really be difficult to aspire to, you know, this is what I'm aiming for. This is who I want to be. I want to be like them. And And also, I think when you have a complete absence of people that you need to look to, you can feel like things in life are shut off to you, that you don't have the same opportunities as other people. Because, you know, you see other people doing well. Oh, well, I don't feel like that person. Mm. I don't identify with that person. Where's someone that represents me? Mm. Where's someone represents me doing well and actually publicly getting acceptance and you know, working with companies and having support and being successful in their career? And when you can't see anybody like that, it's very difficult to see your own path in life. Mm. And I think for me, that's why I care so much about using my position to inspire change, you know, to inspire other people to take their own path, and also just to inspire change in the wider society. Mm. You know,
when you know that, and that the onus is really on the media and big business to put up role models, have representation, have relatable characters on screen, because I think that's the most crucial thing. You know, more women, ethnic minorities, just so that people can identify. And I'm not saying don't get the best person for the job.
No.
I think this is the problem that lots of people seem to have. They go, well, if she's quick enough, she'll make it. So what do you say to that? You know, this is a bit like, you know, I remember talking to one of my colleagues at Sky and saying, you know, we need more people of colour, we need more women on screen at Sky Sports. And actually, it's absolutely happening, and that I'm really proud of that. But he was like, straight away, well, don't get the wrong person for the job. They have to be good enough. They have to know what they're talking about. I was like, absolutely. But positive discrimination is actually a positive path, and things won't change, and they won't have role models to emulate unless you offer up and give that platform in the first place.
Sure.
So
sure.
I don't know. I feel like there's three different questions in there. But yeah, how do you feel about that?
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, you have to be able to walk the walk if you're going to talk the talk.
Yeah.
In terms of racing, for me, it's like, if I'm going to have to be successful and prove that I'm fast enough to warrant the any kind of progression in my career, sure, but without the kind of support from companies, without companies who are willing to say, actually, yeah, do you know what, we're a company who's really passionate about acceptance, equality, diversity and inclusion, and we want to, you know, these are core principles that we want people to know about our brand, and we're going to stand by you, and we want you to represent us.
Mm.
I think without people like that, then it's, for someone in my position, it's nearly impossible to succeed.
Mm.
Because I don't come from a position of having family backing or money behind me. So for me to get to where I want to get to in my career, that needs to happen.
Mm.
And I don't think there's a shortage of companies that really have those beliefs these days. You know, it's such an important part of any large corporation's working culture. You know, if you go to Pride in London, there's no short of money being spent at events like that from big corporations who want to shout very proudly that they're there wholeheartedly supporting the LGBT community.
Mm.
So it's looking for, you know, those companies actually looking for ways outside of events like that to promote those core values.
It's interesting because obviously they've got to be seen to do that, but equally it is about profit, and you're unearthing talent in the process of that, because what you're saying is our doors are open and we are scouring this great earth for great talent. And you can't tell me that only, you know, rich white kids are good racers. You know, there's plenty of talent out there. It just needs to find it, which is why for me it's great that things like the W Series are happening, because it's giving track time to girls that wouldn't otherwise have it, and therefore bringing them up and letting their talent shine. So presumably that's what you're saying, is that you just need the opportunity to show how fast you are.
Absolutely. That's it, through and through. It's having the opportunity, having the chance to prove yourself and those steps upwards into, you know, trying to make a career in motorsport, as anyone knows, is very difficult. And we all just need those helps to help us take those steps to move forwards and to progress. And without that, it's difficult.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So,
why do you think people are so fixated on gender and don't want it to be fluid? Because I'm really interested in this as an idea. There's this sort of like clinical separation, if you like, between men and women, and they want to stereotype and they want to load those stereotypes. But why is that so important to some people, do you think? I mean, that's obviously not important to you, but why can't people be people?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think people should be allowed to be people. You know, people should be free to be non-binary or gender fluid. I think, and I'll be honest, I've come up against people who have accepted me for who I am, who've said to me, well, yeah, I know, I understand, you know, you were born this way, you want to be a girl, fair enough, but I don't understand people who want to be non-binary. I just don't get that. Mm. And I'm like, but why? To me, I'm like, well, why is that so hard to understand? Mm. Somebody that feels like they don't identify as one gender or another. Mm. I guess for me, okay, fair enough, it's easier to understand because I've moved through gender. I see gender as a kind of, I don't see it as two fixed points. Mm. Or perhaps, you know, at one extreme, there is that kind of way of looking at it. But, you know, there's so much grey in between. And I guess having experienced different forms of gender expression, it seems quite easy for me to get my head around. I think because, just going back to what you were saying a moment ago, because it challenges the status quo. Mm. It shakes people's understanding of what it is to be masculine or feminine. Mm. And I think for some people that's troubling. I don't know, because it makes them ask questions about their own identity, because they feel that the world is changing and they don't understand it and they feel less able to relate to it. Mm. But if that's how society is evolving in some ways, then that's just how society is. You know, mm. I think that actually, if you look back, it's really fascinating, but if you look back a long way into history, into so many ancient cultures, going back as far as the Romans or Native Americans, you know, so many cultures actually not only acknowledged people who are trans or non-binary, but actually celebrated these people. You know, they were just a normal part of the fabric of society. Mm. And it's only really in the last few hundred years, thanks mainly to the Victorians, that, you know, that we changed our whole kind of way of looking at, you know, what it is to be a person in society. And so many of these cultures were eroded and people were kind of, you know, locked up or just, you know, driven away from society. And actually, this is it's quite normal that a lot of people just are able to feel this way. Mm. And really, it's nothing new. It's just in the last few hundred years we've actually kind of done a bit of a U-turn. Mm. So, you know, I just think it's so much of it's just about understanding, you know, and empathy, and just people meeting people. And I think people fear what they don't know.
Absolutely. You talked earlier about not having representation, not having someone you could relate to. Did that make you change who you were? Did you try to fight it? Because obviously you only transitioned 7 years ago. So that a lot of your life has been kind of trying to crowbar yourself into something that you're not, into a mould, if you like, that you're not. Just tell us about that on a day-to-day level, how that feels and the sort of things that you would have to do. Because you were in a relationship, weren't you? Were you married before you transitioned, or just in a serious relationship?
I was married. I was with someone for 8 years.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah.
That must have been incredibly hard, wasn't it, to walk away from that?
Do you know, it was one of the hardest things of my entire life. I felt head over heels in love with somebody for the first time. And I guess, you know, anyone who's had that feeling happen to you, you know, it's all consuming. It's an incredible feeling. And I was just so happy. Suddenly being me in my life made sense to me. You know, my identity seemed to add up, because I was one half of something that was much, much bigger and better than just my own kind of existence. And I mean, having to walk away from that relationship was incredibly tough. And
was that because she couldn't cope with the transition?
It wasn't really... Yeah, it wouldn't have been the right thing for us in our relationship. And, you know, of course I respect that. And I just, I was never really spoken about it in an interview before. So I'm just kind of mindful out of respect to my ex, really. But I never thought that I would be someone who would be transitioning.
Actually, for the first time, you were okay with being a man because you'd fallen in love.
I guess so, yeah. You know, I'd sort of nailed the box shut in terms of, you know, how I felt deep down, to such an extent that it wasn't a real thing trying to deal with it anymore. It was just something that was like in the past, and you know, I was just so happy. You know, and I'd never been truly happy in my life before in that way, you know, to have that. And yeah, that was really such a profound thing that I just thought, well, you know, this is just what it's meant to be now. This is who I'm meant to be. And
a man in a heterosexual relationship.
Yeah.
Wow. And so what you were able to bury the feelings of the longing to transition because of that for a number of years.
Yeah, because I was just happy.
Wow.
I was happy in my life. I was happy being me. And you know, I don't know, people might look at that and say that was the wrong thing to do, but if you're never in that situation, if you're never put in that position, it's an impossible set of circumstances to just say, oh, well, this is the logical thing to do. This is, you know, it's not, life's not that easy. Mm. Life's not black and white. I was very happy for a long time in my life like that. You know, leaving that relationship was the darkest, probably about the darkest period of my life, really. Yeah.
But darkness that came into light, because ultimately you then could be who you always meant to be?
Yeah, I think ultimately, I mean, it's funny, I was talking about this morning in a presentation that I was doing. Someone asked me a question, and it's really... they asked me if I had any regrets about transitioning, and I don't. I don't have any regrets in terms of, like, I couldn't imagine being the person that I used to be, you know? Like, I wouldn't do that for all the money in the world. I know that I am who I'm meant to be. There's no doubt in my mind. I have regrets in terms of what had to happen for that to take place. Because, yeah, that was something that I'm not proud of, but it just, I can't help, you know, I can't help the set of cards I was dealt in life, you know.
I don't think it's a case not being proud. I mean, I don't know, it feels like... I don't know, that makes my heart heavy to hear you say that, because you obviously do carry guilt and grief because of that.
I do, yeah, I do. I mean, you know, it's making me kind of quite emotional thinking about it now, because it was really tough. It was really tough. And I'll always have some kind of guilt that I feel for that. You know, it's a real thing that happened, you know, and it affected people. And but all I can do is try and find the best way forwards. You know, hindsight is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, but come on, this isn't your fault. It's not about hindsight. I mean, you can't have regrets. You can't help falling in love. And equally, you can't... I mean, actually, do you know what? I'm going to counter that, because I do think you make a series of decisions before falling in love, I think. But ultimately, you were who you were, and that then led you to a situation where you fell in love. And then, you know, that carried you for a while. And in a way, that's beautiful, because... love was enough. But you can't deny who you are and who you're born as.
Yeah, I mean, well, exactly. I mean, you sum it up perfectly there, because you can't deny that. You can deny that for as long as you can deny it. And, I've had people contact me through my YouTube channel or Facebook or you know, because I've vlogged about my whole transition on YouTube, and... that is something that I am very proud of, that I've been able to help a lot of people in their own journey through that process, through sharing my own journey. But I've had a lot of people contact me who've been in similar situations like that, and they're like, what should I do? I'm like, it's just, I don't know, everybody reaches transition in their own time, their own period of their life, when it's right for them. I had a very good counsellor who helped me a lot, and you know, he used to say it's like a crossroads, and if you take the path not to transition, it just goes in a big circle. Ultimately, you'll always keep coming back to the same position in your life. And I remember when I was seeing him for counseling, and I tried to work through a lot of stuff, and I went away and I tried to sort myself out, and I reasoned that, you know, I should just stay with everything as it was, and that it was, you know, I could do this. And when I finally went back to him, and I was in bits, you know, I was suicidal, and I said, you know, I realize I have to transition. There's no other way. There's no other way forwards. And he said, do you know, I knew one day you'd come back and you'd tell me this, but I could never tell you that. You had to find your own place. You had to find your own way to this moment. And it was a pretty profound moment that's always stuck with me. Because there's no field manual for transition. There's just, life can be tough. Life throws all kinds of amazing, incredible, wonderful, difficult, challenging things at us. And we're all just trying to navigate our way through it. And trying to do our best. And that's the way it is.
Did you say you're suicidal, did you genuinely consider that taking your life was a better out than having to confront what was in front of you at the time?
Yeah, I did, because I was in so much pain, and I knew that whatever path I took was going to cause pain to me, pain for other people. And I couldn't see a way out. I couldn't see that whatever decision I made was going to be the wrong one.
Mm.
And living with that became so difficult to deal with that it really did seem like the only way out for me.
Mm.
And thank God I didn't.
Mm.
And, do you know, and I remember thinking, I owe this to my parents, because neither of them are sadly alive anymore. Mm. And I thought, you know, they wouldn't want this for me.
So is that what stopped you?
I think so. I thought, you know, they wouldn't want me to carry on. They would want me to carry on. They wouldn't want me to do this. Mm. And I owe it to them, because there is a way through this.
Mm.
Scary and uncertain as it is, the only way through it is to transition.
Mm. And what kind of support you had? Did you have through that process? You obviously lost your mum very young, and you lost your dad as well. You have a brother that you're close to?
I have two brothers.
Two brothers?
Yeah, two amazing elder brothers. So they're about, I don't know, about 7 or 8 years older than me. So I'm the baby of the family. So yeah, they were pretty cool about things. We were working together still at the time when I said to them I needed to transition. So that was...
Do you think they knew already?
I think they... I mean, the thing is, you know, I came out to my mum that time when I was 10, and I know my mum told them, but I don't know if they kind of fully remember or whatever, but maybe it kind of just got lost in the ether a little bit. Mm. But yeah, they've been amazing. It's, you know, it's a challenge for anyone, I think, with family. Mm. Working through something like transition, because it's not like just you transitioning on your own. The other people around you have to transition as well.
Yeah.
And I was very conscious. I mean, because we were spending 5 days a week together in an office, I was very conscious of it working for everyone. Mm-hmm. So in some ways I wanted to go like, I'm transitioning. I've been waiting all my life to do this. And now it's happening, and I want to just do everything very quickly. But at the same time, I thought, you know, if this is going to work for me, I need to have everybody on board. I need to have everybody's support.
Yeah.
So I want to do things in a way and at a pace that is mindful of that fact. So I took a lot of time to kind of... I mean, I was something like 6 months between me actually telling everybody I was going to transition and starting to live full time.
Right.
Which was kind of crazy.
So what does that actually mean? So when you say live full time, what does it mean?
So it's a terminology that's kind of stems from the sort of NHS's like guidelines on when you sort of say, right, okay, I'm going to change my name, I'm going to change my legal documentation, and I'm going to live, you know, from this day forwards as my gender that I identify as. So it's a kind of like, you know, it's a very, not to say it's the point of no return, but it's that point where you take that huge step into the unknown, really. And because it was so long between me doing that, it kind of diffused a lot of things, because I told people, and people were like, you know, immediately like, oh my God, I can't believe I've have you heard Charlie Martin's, you know, yeah. But after a while, all of that kind of died down. Mm. Nothing really happened.
Mm.
People are like, well, are you doing this? Because like you kind of, I heard that you're doing.
They're thinking, it's not working. you look the same.
And like, you know, I didn't change my name because I kept my name the same. And it's like
quite handy with the name Charlie.
It's kind of handy. I've got my parents to thank for that.
Yeah,
good bit of foresight on that one. So, you know, and it was like, yeah. I'm gonna start on the. I think it was the 28th of June. I think 2012. And but it kind of meant actually people had kind of almost lost interest to a degree,
which is quite good, because then you kind of go back under the radar a bit, don't you? You just get on with it on your own terms.
Exactly, and that's what I needed. And it kind of meant that, you know, by that point everybody was like, everybody knew there were no, you know, it took a bit of the...
Which in itself must be hugely liberating, because I think part of the exhausting part of living a lie in a way is that nobody knows and you can't vent, you can't escape it. I mean, that must in itself be crushing.
Yeah, and it is. And, you know, when you're finally in a position that you can tell people, and you're like... And I, you know, I remember when I first started telling people, and you know, the first few of my friends that I told, you know, I'd be like, oh, can we meet up for, you know, somewhere and whatever, meet for a drink. And I'd be like, I'd have this whole dialogue rehearsed in my head. And I'd be like, oh, you know, I've really had this terrible thing and it's been really hard. And, you know, and by the end of like telling them, they'd be like, yeah, well, what? Is, what? And I'd be like, well, you know, I'm trans and I just need to trans. And they'd be, oh, well, okay, right. Well, that's all right. And, you know, and the event, and after about the sort of fifth person, I'd just be like, yeah, well, basically I'm trans. And I need
to transition. Deal with it. Yeah.
And people were like, okay. But yeah, it kind of explains, I guess, somehow the kind of workings inside my mind that I've been living with this thing my whole life and I built it into this, you know, this terrible thing that people just weren't ready for and people wouldn't accept and people wouldn't want to be my friend anymore or want to know me. Mm. And it just wasn't the case. It was like, people were like, okay, you know, people were surprised, people were a bit shocked, but you're still the same person. Mm. And just
I know this sounds sort of way too simplistic, but just explain to people how it's different to sexual orientation, how it's different to coming out as gay. Because presumably, I mean, I don't know, are you straight or gay? How do you identify in that respect?
I mean, I identify as pansexual, which is kind of to say that I my attraction to people isn't really based on their gender identity as such.
You like someone for who they are?
I like someone for who they
are.
It's
pretty simple.
Yeah, basically.
It's nice.
Yeah, and that's pansexual in a nutshell, really. Mm. And so your physical sex, your gender identity, and your who you're attracted to, are three separate things. Mm. And again, for a lot of people, the majority of people, they're probably all in alignment. But for a lot of people who, you know, I know a lot of trans people who identify as pan. I think because I have a very different insight into what it is to be male or female and what gender actually is to the majority of society, and don't tend to see things in the same way. Mm. And you can be, you know, just because you're attracted to somebody, that doesn't really define your gender identity. It doesn't define, you know, all these things can be very fluid. I mean, to me, it just seems so straightforward because I guess I've always thought like that, really. It took me a long time to understand myself, and to a degree, I'm still trying to figure myself out.
Well, aren't we all? Don't worry about that. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because if you've always felt like that, but that is at odds with how everybody else around you feels, that's where the sort of juxtaposition occurs, isn't it? That's where the sort of angst, if you like, starts breeding from.
Which, sure. And, you know, I remember when I was quite early into my transition and some people I knew who were kind of more like friends of friends, you know, you'd be at a party and someone's like feeling a bit kind of bold and comes up and like, oh, are you Charlie? And you're like, yes, I know what's coming.
Yeah.
They're like, so now you transition, do you fancy boys now or girls? Yeah. You know, has that changed? I'm just like, well, for one, like, who are you?
Yeah.
Two, like, why is this any of your business? Yeah. But at the end of the day, why do you need to know?
Yeah.
Why does that matter?
I think people are intrigued because they want to know if that changes as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whether it was, you know, consistent. But as you say, I think it's a kind of, you know, it's such a deeply personal thing anyway. Like, as in the way you feel, you know, everybody's different and everybody's beautifully unique in that respect, you know.
Yeah, and I would never dream of walking up to somebody in a party and going,
are you straight?
Are you Steve? Hi, Steve. Do you fancy men or women?
Yeah.
Or both?
Yeah.
You'd be like, what? Who are you?
Hi, my name's Charlie. Nice to meet you. Yeah, exactly.
I know so many trans people who just regularly have those kinds of experiences.
Yeah, but
I think part of that isn't... I think part of it's not necessarily like, you know, it's maybe a... I don't know, it's not meant as an intentional malice.
No,
curiosity that comes across in a kind of unfiltered way.
Yes.
Which...
And do you know what, in a way, as hard as it may be in that moment, you should forgive them because that is part of the education process. Like, I think until people kind of people will be grappling with those questions, and until they get answers and work it out in their mind, we're never going to open people's minds and hearts to the idea of a much more inclusive society. You always have to let them ask those silly questions.
Yeah, and I think...
I mean, I asked it.
No, but I mean...
Sorry about that.
In a nice way. But I think, you know, and I do feel like that, you know, I accept we are where we are as a society. We're at a point where there's still, you know... If I have to answer some uncomfortable questions at times in my life, then I'm just thinking, you know, this isn't a chance to try and educate people.
Yeah,
and that's how we make progress. So
that's
I'm not gonna say.
I mean, so, it's, you know, awkward questions lead to conversation, leads to progress. And that's got to be great. And what a legacy for you to have initiated, be a trailblazer in that respect.
I mean, I have quite thick skin, and I've developed confidence through going through transition that I never had before.
Mm.
I don't feel like the same person that I used to be.
That's amazing.
I mean, seriously, there's things that I do that I go into now, situations that I would never have dreamt of walking into things like that now. You know, public speaking, which I now do a lot of, going into companies and talking about my experiences and sharing that in a way that people can learn and understand. I would never have been able to do things like that. Mm. But I feel... Yeah, if I'm able to do that and I have the confidence and I have the platform, then I want to do that because there's only good that can come from
absolutely.
That. You know?
I read a quote from you that said, "My transition made me a braver on the track, more confident in taking risks." Explain how that worked, because that's really interesting. If you feel like you've become a better racer for it.
And do you know, I have. If I look back in the 6 years prior to transition and the 6 years since, I've got a cabinet, well, not a cabinet, a couple of all my trophies at home on a shelf. What I won before that, it's like, I don't know, 6 or 7 trophies. And everything I've won that since then, it's like, I don't know, it's night and day. It's like the physical proof of that. And I think because transition was the scariest thing I could ever imagine doing in my life. And the fear of failing and messing it up and my life just falling through a hole in front of me in the ground was a very real prospect. It was a leap of faith. And to do it and it go not only okay, but to go really well and to feel like, wow, I am the person I've always wanted to be. I'm happy and I have something that no one can ever take away from me. You know, whatever happens in my life now, I know I wake up in the morning and I see the person I am staring back in the mirror. To know that, it just made me more of a risk taker. Because I'm like, well, I've climbed the biggest mountain I could ever imagine in my life. And everything feels possible now. Anything feels possible. And so in terms of racing, not only being able to focus and think clearly because I'm not dealing with all the stuff in the back of my head, but also just pushing myself on track, you know, especially racing in hill climb, where, you know, when I went off to race in France, racing a Formula Renault on French B roads on a course that's like 6 kilometers long that you have to know by heart every corner, every braking zone, every bump, and driving that at like, I don't know, getting up to like 140 miles an hour with trees and rocks and buildings and stuff. You've got to be brave.
That is my son coming back from nursery. Please let me pause this for a moment.
No problem.
So, one thing that I wanted to pick up on with you is that actually you have less testosterone in your body now, but you are a better racer since the transition, which plays into my theory that actually women make better racers than men. Okay, I'm only joking. Obviously not, but I'm picking up on something that Jenson Button said, which was there is nothing physically that precludes a woman from racing against a man. And this is something I'm quite passionate about, that you are a very interesting case study, because do you think like a man when you race or do you think like a woman?
Goodness knows. I just think like a driver. I mean, I don't have any testosterone in my body. You know, I haven't for 6 years or something now.
And yet you're a better racer for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, my results speak for themselves, you know. when you look at what I did when I went off to do the French Hill Climb Championship, I mean, regular podiums, it was a time in my life when I just suddenly started, I don't know, it was like someone flicked a switch in my head. Mm-hmm. And I just started driving and getting results. And yeah, I mean, it is a really interesting thing to think about, because I don't know. I try to think back to how I used to think, if that's possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the context of when I was driving a car and when I was racing and what was happening and how I would operate. I mean, especially now racing in endurance, where you're driving for an hour at a time easily. Mm. You know, your brain controlling your thoughts and your mental state during that period is really important to how you perform and drive the car. Mm. I feel like I have less distractions. I'm able
clarity
to
clarity is something that you touched on clarity. Earlier, just that clarity of mind, that you didn't have the noise going on back here challenging you.
I think that's a really important thing, because I was really carrying around something that in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, don't think about this. Mm. Don't think, whatever you do, don't think about this, because it'll just stress you out or make you feel sad or upset or whatever. And that was a thing, you know, my brain was actively doing that day in, day out. Mm. Even if I wasn't aware of it was like a computer program running in the background. Mm. And when I stopped doing that, I remember actually, it was really profound, the feeling of clarity and calm that I had when I started taking estrogen. And I was on testosterone blockers. So basically removed testosterone, replaced it with estrogen. Mm. And the effect that had on my, just my mental state. Mm. And I know so many people who've said the same thing. I just felt like I could breathe. Like I could just slow down and take stock and think about things clearly. And, you know, I mean, I've made videos about it on my YouTube channel, I'm sure, about how, yeah, you know, how it feels not having testosterone in your body. It's a funny thing. And, mm-hmm. and just the kind of calm that's kind of come from, mm-hmm. from feeling like, okay. I mean, I'm really into meditation these mm-hmm. days. I got into that about a year ago. That's generally something I do every day. And I think as well, that's really another thing that helps me kind of relax and connect with my inner self and my thoughts, my feelings, and just have that kind of sense of clarity. You know, my life, I'm sure you have a very hectic schedule yourself, and when you're rushing around trying to do a million things, it can be difficult to find that kind of stillness, you know, when you just want to grab a moment. And I find meditation really helps me with that. It kind of sets me up for the day, and I can,
it feels in a way like that you've released your talent, because your talent was sort of down there wrestling with everything else that was going on, and you've kind of almost set it free. I know that sounds a bit, you know, hippie-ish, but I like this idea that just finally having clarity of mind has given you the opportunity to shine in a way that you weren't before, because there was too much else going on.
Yeah, and I honestly think that for me, transitioning was the key to unlocking my performance as a driver, as an athlete. Yeah. And it really has made all the world a difference to me. It's and you know, the thing that I want most now is for other people to have that in their life. Yeah. I don't want other people to grow up feeling scared or alone or ashamed or, you know, unable to, limiting what they feel they can achieve in their life just because of how they were born. You know, I want everybody to have what I've had, that experience, because everybody deserves that. And that's why I'm so passionate about being visible, because really, by me being visible, that by people hearing my story and understanding my story and listening to this podcast, you know, this is probably one of the first times I've really talked about a lot of the things we've talked about today. And when people have that understanding, it just creates a more a more accepting environment where everybody feels free to be themselves and people don't feel those barriers. Mm. People don't feel, you know, limited. People feel able to, oh, do you know what, actually, whether that's someone thinking, well, you know, this is where I work, this is where I compete in my sports team, this is the team that I support, whatever that environment, it's about people feeling feeling able to take control and feeling that the support is there and seeing that the support is there. And I think that's why it's so important to be visible, to share that.
Because it's such a distraction, if nothing else, having to fight over here, a sort of silent fight, an anonymous sort of behind the scenes fight, and you're not able to channel your energy into life and succeeding and progressing in a different way. So, you know, being set free in that respect is fantastic. And hopefully others will follow suit in that respect. Just taking it back to the physical and this idea, because again, someone else on the team who will remain nameless believes that it's testosterone that you need to be ruthless, to make those sort of gutsy moves, if you like, on the racetrack. And a woman is just too cautious in that respect. I obviously want you to counter that with a strong argument, because I always do in the production office. But sometimes I'm not alone in my views, but I just don't believe that all overtakes need to be gutsy and testosterone fueled. They can be manufactured from a very different standpoint, i.e., you know, taking back, taking stock, and guile and smart, clever overtaking is actually often much more effective.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd argue that certainly in endurance racing, where, you know, you don't win the race in the first 10 minutes, you've got to be consistent and you've got to stay out of trouble. And yeah, you've got to be fast, but it's not a case of going guns blazing in the first corner necessarily, because in a race that's going to last hours and hours, that's not necessarily going to get you to the finish line. I mean, I think, yeah, I agree with what you said. I think clarity and vision and, you know, and looking at things clearly can be just as effective in terms of spotting an overtaking opportunity, reading a situation, reading the cars around you, all those kinds of things. I can see why someone might say that, but I mean, I don't feel that's really necessarily the be all and end all in making a good racing driver. I mean, there are plenty of female drivers out there doing very well in various disciplines who are showing that, you know, women can cut it with the guys.
Oh yeah, absolutely. W Series, would you consider going for it?
I mean,
I think it would be great. I'm just gonna put it out there. I think it would be great, wouldn't it?
I mean, to be honest, I would never turn down an opportunity to drive in something like W Series. I think I'm at a point in my career where, I'll be honest, you know, it's been difficult for me this season. You know, coming into the biggest race we've got, Le Mans, where I'm in a position where I'm struggling for funding, and I think that's a position that a lot of drivers have in their career. Mm-hmm. I think something like W Series that gives drivers an opportunity. I mean, a paid drive in an F3 car is a wonderful opportunity for any driver. And I mean, I guess I've been very focused on endurance, because that's for me, the goal has always been to compete at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. But I mean, if I had an opportunity to do something like that, then yeah.
Excellent.
It would be very exciting.
2020, your name's going to be up there, I'm sure of it. Okay, and let's just finish up by looking forward, embracing this incredible Le Mans adventure that awaits. What can people do to support you? How can people get in touch? How can people sponsor?
So, I mean, really the best thing to do is just Google my name or Google Go Charlie. Right now I've got a crowdfunder out, which is to try and get me to Le Mans, but that's on Just Giving. But fundamentally, just check out my social media, Go Charlie M. I've got quite a lot of stuff out there on social media. Been on the TV quite a lot, I suppose, the last 6 months. So to be honest, I feel like, you know, I'm really trying to do something different in motorsport. and I'm trying to make a difference. And I think there's a great opportunity there for partners to come on board, really, to do something a bit different and a bit brave, and something that can create a really positive change in the world. And for fans, yeah, I mean, I've got some fantastic followers out there, and it's been amazing, you know, all the time when you're, whether you're having a good weekend or you're having a bit of a not so good weekend, it's really the people that follow you and support you on social media that can lift your spirits. And so it's great to have so much support out there right now.
And it's pretty apt that that's what's giving you the support that you need, because ultimately it was social media, it was YouTube that's got you to this point. So that, you know, that's a massive tick in the box for where we've come from and to where we're going, that it's been the openness of media and social media that's helped you get to this point in the first place, isn't it? I mean, it's great. You're able to talk directly to people that can help you and who you can help. Oh, excuse me, Mike. That's probably the alarm to say go and pick the kids up from nursery, which is a bit late. Charlie, listen, it's just been so lovely to have your company. And as I tweeted the other day, for me, sport and motorsport specifically should and has to be inclusive. It has to be a meritocracy, which is something that you've always argued that, you know, if you're fast enough, you'll get there. But it has to be, you know, people opening their arms to it. And I think you embody that for me. So thank you so much for your time. I think you're brave and beautiful and brilliant, and keep up the hard work.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure to chat. Thanks.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.